The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So the recording monk asked me if I had a title for this talk, and I don't yet. So one thing it could be called would be some questions and answers. Today we're honoring Great Master Bodhidharma, the 28th ancestor in the line of Shakyamuni Buddha, and the first ancestor in the tradition of the Chan or Zen school of Buddhism. That is the school of Buddhism with pure meditation at its heart. What I'd like to do today in talking about Bodhidharma's teaching and a bit about some teaching from the Diamond Sutra might be called, as in the title of this book, Describing the Indescribable. That's not easy to do, and I ask your forgiveness if this talk seems to circle around a point without ever getting to it. Thing is, each of us has to get to the point by ourselves. Even the Buddhas and the great masters only point the way. So much legend has grown up around the figure of Bodhidharma, which you can look up if you want to. I think the essential fact about Bodhidharma is summed up in a line from today's offertory. He did not try to explain the Dharma in words. Instead, by just keeping the precepts and doing silent meditation, he taught all around him. I want to repeat that because it's been a guide for me for a long time. He did not try to explain the Dharma in words. Instead, by just keeping the precepts and doing silent meditation, he taught all around him. Pure meditation, just sitting, just watching the mind, just keeping the precepts. Ceasing from evil, doing only good, and doing good for others. Simple, right? Easy? No. So pure meditation, just watching the mind, not trying to explain the Dharma in words. So what am I doing sitting here? And we're human beings. We teach by example, and we have to use words. We're human beings and we're marked by the faculty of human language. We're obliged to do our very best to use words while knowing they fall short. We answer questions knowing that there is no completely satisfactory answer to be given. No knowledge, no attainment. Even a great master such as Bodhidharma wasn't entirely successful, and yet he was. In answering questions posed to him, first by the Emperor of China and later by his true disciple, Hui Ko, or Eka, as the name appears in our ancestral line. So let's begin with Bodhidharma. Legend has it that he came as a monk, sailing for 3 years from southern India to China, where he had an interview with Emperor Wu of the Liang Dynasty. Excuse my pronunciation. My limited knowledge of Buddhist history suggests that the most widespread forms of the religion at that time, which is around the 4th century, may have been scholarly study and debate, and or devotional recitation of the names of the Buddha and so on, rather than based on pure meditation. The emperor, a devout Buddhist, ask Bodhidharma 2 questions. Number 1, what is the Dharma you transmit? And number 2, how much merit will I receive for my generosity in funding monasteries and monks? Bodhidharma answered to number 1, what is the Dharma you transmit? The Buddha's Dharma is empty. I transmit nothing. And to number two, how much merit will I receive for my generosity in funding monasteries and monks? The answer Bodhidharma gave was, you will receive no merit at all. Let's start with the first question and answer. What is the Dharma you transmit? And the answer, the Buddha's Dharma is empty. I transmit nothing. What could he have meant? Nothing? We can find a clue to this teaching in the Diamond Sutra, where the Buddha has his wise disciple, Sabbuti, conclude that even the Buddha himself cannot speak of anything definite. And I'll read just a couple of things from this book. The Buddha is speaking, and he says, this is why I have often said to you, monks, that even my teachings should be understood to be like a raft. If even the Dharma must be let go of, then how much more must everything else be let go of? And what he's referring to is his teaching is a raft that carries beings from the shore of the realm of suffering to the shore of the realm of nirvana or liberation from suffering. Is a raft. The Dharma, the teaching, is a raft that carries beings from one shore of suffering to the other shore of liberation. And then, do you want to carry the raft around with you? No. The raft must be let go of, and so must the other shore. Now, what's next? This is another teaching from the Diamond Sutra, teaching by the Buddha, in a section called Nothing Has Been Attained and Nothing Has Been Said. The Buddha asks his disciple, Sabbuti, what do you say? Has the Tathagata really attained highest complete enlightenment? Has the Tathagata really spoken a Dharma? Sabbuti says, as far as I understand what the Buddha has said, there is no definite Dharma that can be called highest complete enlightenment. And there is no definite Dharma that could be spoken about by the Tathagata. And why is this? The Dharma of which the Tathagata speaks cannot be held on to. It cannot be spoken. It is not a law, and it is not a non-law. And that is why all bodhisattvas understand the unconditioned dharmas differently. Although that was spoken by Sabbuti, the Buddha's disciple, it can be understood to be a correct speaking of the Buddha's own teaching, because the Buddha doesn't say, like he does in some other places in this scripture, don't ever say that or no, don't say that. So we can assume that the teaching is correct. The Buddha led Sabbuti to answer the question in this way. Okay. So there you have it. Nothing. Nothing has been attained and nothing has been said. I could call this talk a talk about nothing, but I won't. And yet, there is an unborn, unconditioned. There is that which is greater than ourselves. So, let's turn to the answer to Bodhidharma's question number two. How much merit, the emperor asked, will I receive from all the funding of monasteries and monks I've done? And Bodhidharma's answer, you will receive no merit at all. What could he have meant by that? I know, and others know, from experience that what we call merit exists. However, I don't know what it is or where it comes from. We offer merit, but we can't put it in a box and wrap it with a bow. Intuitive discernment and the Dharma tell us that positive actions beget positive results. And the offering of merit, making that offering, is a positive action which will lead to positive results, which we offer when we offer merit. Positive actions beget positive results, and negative actions beget negative results. The precepts point us towards goodness and away from harm. The offering of merit is a positive action. However, the offer of merit while wishing for something in return might be called a bribe. The emperor's question, a very human question, by the way, I've asked questions like this, shows the self on which it was based, specifically the presence of some greed. He wanted something. The question suggests that the emperor may have been engaging in Buddhist practice based on wanting something for himself. And if there is anyone here who has never done that, please see me after the talk. We all want something sometimes. We all train with our own greed, hatred, and delusion. Bodhidharma's answer of no merit pointed the emperor in the direction of practice without ulterior motive, training for training's sake, non-attachment. Although it's uncertain whether the emperor heard the answer within the answer, we ourselves can hear it when we sit quietly enough. We still hear the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall. The emperor's questions and Bodhidharma's answers point to an essential aspect of Buddhist teaching, shunyata, or emptiness. Now, I don't really like to bring up words like that because they're a stretch for me, but it's good to stretch sometimes. Reverend Master Jiyu translated this as void rather than empty to help people avoid falling into nihilism or the idea of a great meaningless nothingness. She described it as the fullest emptiness you'll ever know. One source I looked at said that the emperor of China was less than impressed by Bodhidharma's answers. And so after this interview, Bodhidharma relocated to another part of the country where he spent 9 years facing a wall in meditation. Just by keeping the precepts and doing silent meditation, he taught all around him. We still hear the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall. During those 9 years, or sometime after them, a true disciple, Wiko or Eka, appeared. Bodhidharma's discourse on pure meditation, which is in this book, Buddhist Writings, contains a series of more than a dozen questions asked of Bodhidharma by his disciple Eka, together with Bodhidharma's answer. The first question is, if I can find it, I didn't put a flag on this page. The first question is, when people are committed to seeking the Buddha's way, what methods of training should they consider? Bodhidharma replied, since pure meditation embraces all methods and practices, I call it the essential one. Well, the first answer, the answer to that question, contains it all. And like a true, earnest student, the Venerable Eka goes on to ask about a dozen more questions. So, well, if meditation contains it all, then why do the sutras say this, or why do people do that, and so on. And Bodhidharma answers all of them with great patience and clarity. At the end of the questions and answers, Bodhidharma concludes with saying, would that I had explained for you the subtle mysteries of the gate to the Dharma in depth, rather than discuss the mind in barest outline, detailing but such a scant portion of the reason for which we train. If you ever want to read the discourse, it's magnificent. He doesn't need to say he's sorry for it, in other words. It's a magnificent piece of work. And yet even the great masters like Bodhidharma understand that by trying to express the Dharma in words, it's not quite there. It's not quite it. Now, turning back to the Diamond Sutra, the disciple, Subhuti, asked the Buddha, at the beginning of the scripture, a two-part question. When good men and good women commit themselves to highest complete enlightenment, on what should they base themselves, and how should they subdue their minds? A little similarity between that and Ekka's question to Bodhidharma. So let's focus on the first part of the question. When good men and good women commit themselves to highest complete enlightenment, on what should they base themselves? The Buddha responds to that question by saying that great bodhisattvas should subdue their minds by realizing, as they vow to save all sentient beings, that in truth there are no sentient beings to be saved. And he also says, and that within this phenomenal world, a bodhisattva ought to practice generosity without basing it on anything. So here's my number one quote. Commentators have said, excuse me, I seem to have the wrong page with a flag on it. The ancients all explained this section of the sutra by saying that generosity stands for all six of the paramitas as well as all other forms of practice. That is why the Buddha spoke only about generosity. So basically the Buddha was saying we should do all of our practice without basing it on anything whatsoever. Practice for the sake of practice. And I used a word, paramita, which means that which helps us cross over to the other shore. It's sometimes translated as perfections, but that's a little iffy to me. The six of them are generosity, morality, patience, vigor, meditation, and wisdom. And so those are the practices of bodhisattvas in training for Buddhahood. In other words, the Buddha tells Subhuti that a bodhisattva must learn to act without basing his or her mind on anything at all. How can we ever do such a thing? Just by keeping the precepts and doing silent meditation. There's nothing more important than the daily practice of meditation and the precepts. Each time we let go of another thought, each time we let another thought arise, abide, and pass in meditation, we build on our capacity for non-attachment. Each time we practice pure meditation, we're acting without basing our mind on anything at all, just as the Buddha said we should do. And when we're able to bring our meditation and our precepts off the cushion and into our daily lives, we're bodhisattvas learning to act without basing our mind on anything at all. Each time we say yes to whatever circumstances ask of us, we're bodhisattvas learning to practice generosity without basing it on anything. Remember I mentioned that I had been reflecting on shunyata, or emptiness. Another meaning of shunyata is devoid of an essence or devoid of an absolute self-nature. When Bodhidharma answered the emperor, saying that the Buddha's Dharma is empty, the answer pointed to the lack of any permanent phenomenon that can be identified or grasped. That is, the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon itself. The Buddha's teaching must be realized for oneself, each of us, and put into practice in the only real way, in our daily life.